Well, we're here at the third Crash Retrieval Conference in Las Vegas, Nevada, and Rod Simone, it's great to see you again.
Great to be back with you, Jerry.
You know, we were running a few things through Google and a few other research deals, and I came up with a Navy lieutenant up in Fallon, Nevada by the name of Rod Simone. That's not you, though.
No, same name, different guy.
Well, I mean, you know, how did I know? You might have left and resigned and became a pilot again. Who knows?
Yes, there's some people in ufology that do lead a double life, but I can definitely say that I'm not one of them.
Now, you know, that was Top Gun school.
Yes.
So it's kind of interesting. Anyway, you're still doing your show in London.
Yeah.
And other show, stations as well.
Yes, every week, yeah.
And you've had some pretty interesting things happening. One of the things I've noted about your career recently is the fact that you are now doing lots of speaking engagements yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm talking a lot about my research into international ufology. And
you're going to be in New Jersey next week?
Yes.
And where is that?
That's at the Earth Mysteries Conference near New York City. And I'm talking about my three-year travel around the world exploring the extraterrestrial and paranormal aspects of ancient civilizations and belief systems.
You know, we've had you on before, but we mentioned a little bit.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about it, yeah.
But you actually spent 2.5 or 3 years running around the globe.
Right, yeah, traveling around the world, talking with the aboriginals of Australia, talking with the Sufis and Sadhus of India and Nepal, and with a special focus on the Middle East, and all talking to the Dalai Lama, and all the while exploring, as I say, the extraterrestrial components of these ancient belief systems.
I was telling Roberta Scott, our On Location producer, I said, I can just see Rob with his legs crossed and his hands up and a turban on.
I actually did wear a turban, and there's a lot of pictures in my presentation of me wearing a turban in Egypt, traveling around of all the sites. I do blend in rather well, I must say, to all these exotic locations, and it's very helpful.
We're going to get into your television appearances and things like that in a moment.
Yeah.
But we're talking about turbans and talking about your trip around. That kind of plays into what you speak about these days.
Yes, it does. You know, there was an incredible encounter when I was in Istanbul. A lot of amazing things happened. One of them, right when I was there, was that there was an encounter with the pilot from the Turkish Air Force with a UFO that had a dogfight, and it made all of the national papers. And so I got a chance to talk with the Air Force, a Turkish Air Force spokesperson, and we went on back and forth, and it became this week-long adventure, and complete with the Air Force over there doing as the Air Force in America does, blaming it on weather balloons, birds, and meteorites. They're playing by the same handbook of denial.
The same story.
It's true. It really is.
When you were traveling, yeah. You don't speak all these languages.
I have a smattering of Hindi and Arabic and a little bit of Farsi. And yeah, wherever I was, I made sure that I had enough to get by, at least.
Let's talk a little bit. You think there's a Muslim connection to the ET story?
Well, that's a big part, yeah, of what I've been looking into. In the Middle East, they have an incredible history when it comes to UFOs, dating all the way back to the year 500 with Muhammad and his revelations of this angel, this angelic being, Gabriel, which is the foundation for the Holy Quran, which is the basis of Islam.
Tell me a little bit more about that. I know you had some slides and a whole presentation that's part of it, I think.
Absolutely. When I was over there, I was really amazed to find when I spoke to people, they were very eager to tell me that the first line of the Quran says, Allah created many worlds, plural. They go on to tell me their belief in many different civilizations and different planets, and how some of it is even supported in the Quran. And that's not to mention their belief in extraterrestrial and supernatural beings that make up a very large part of their history and culture, even to this day.
You're saying that's actually some references in the Quran?
Absolutely. Just in the same way as the Bible talks about the seraphim, the cherubim, it talks about the Nephilim, the Quran has similar passages that talk about beings that are flying, beings that like to be worshipped as God, and they have children with earthly women, the same kind of imagery, the same type of information.
It's, you know, mind-boggling when you think about that. They all have very similar stories. What do you think is going on there? What do you think is happening there? Have you reached a theory at all, or are you just kind of gathering information still yet?
Well, I've uncovered quite a bit from a lot of different civilizations. As I said, I talked to the Dalai Lama, and I asked his opinions on extraterrestrial life.
And what did he say?
The Muslim world. He was open to it. And it's something that is not a problem. In other words, we in the Western world seem to be so focused on having to qualify or scientifically explain these UFOs and ETs. But, you know, in the most part of the world, in the Middle East and in Asia, they've got no problem with it. They've already accepted it.
You know, I don't know anyone in the media that has been associated with all of the players in the UFO community, if I can use that description, then you've actually been on to almost every conference known to mankind the last couple of years. Before that, you were touring the world seeking information. Has your perspective changed? It's bound to have from when you first got interested. I noticed in your bio, I think you must have been back in the late 90s in Sedona, or?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And it's, so immediately I think of spiritual, mystical things, but every time I talk to you, we talk about knocking on the door of a spaceship. Let's really find out about Rob Simons.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as I got into this field, I was working with a civil activist organization called CAUSE, where I became a paralegal in the mid-90s. And
well, then you probably know Larry Bryan.
Sure know Larry.
Yeah, yeah.
And Peter Gersten, which is who I worked with, who was the quote-unquote UFO lawyer. And we sued the information for government, and I thought that was a very practical approach to this very mysterious field. And from there, I just got in deeper and deeper and deeper. And it has been something that is part of my intellectual pursuit, and it's also part of my personal path, because I think that the search for the truth about our place in the universe is more about intellectual curiosity. It's really about personal growth. If we want to make an accurate assessment of who we are, what we believe in, you have to look at the ET issue, because the extraterrestrial issue touches into every possible fabric, every possible aspect of humanity.
When we talk about the ET issue itself, you're convinced there are extraterrestrials, correct?
Yeah, there's overwhelming evidence, yeah.
And there's probably more than one species.
Clearly, yeah. The Drake Equation alone estimates trillions of intelligent civilizations in the universe. In fact, our planet is on the edge of this particular galaxy that we're in. And the center of the galaxy is millions of times older than our part of the spiral arm. So in our galaxy alone, there's untold civilizations that could have developed millions of years before the Earth had ever cooled and became habitable to life.
You know, I never really saw a UFO until last November. It was in Phoenix by Pinnacle Peak doing the anniversary of the Phoenix Light Show.
Yes.
And lo and behold, Roberta was with me, and it's on our programs. You can go listen to the archives. There it was. Yes. Have you seen a flying saucer?
I've seen so many incredible things traveling around the world. And lately, I've been seeing them more and more. In fact, I was fixing a window in my house in Los Angeles.
I want to get into that, too. Why you're in L.A. now. You're a true media giant. You're in Los Angeles. You're fixing a window.
I was fixing a window, and I was inside the garage. It was a garage window, and I saw this brown thing moving silently across the sky. And I pulled out my camera, took three pictures of it, and it's extraordinary. This thing is a different shape in every frame. And I can't explain it, but these if you open up your mind to this reality, if you open up your consciousness, you will start to have these experiences. It's as simple as that.
The experience you had, and we've been to UFO conferences before where speakers have said something that I think is really true, we all agree. UFO sightings and encounters are life-changing experiences.
Yes, they are. They're paradigm shifters.
That's a good term.
Yeah.
So when you started, why were you interested in this subject to begin with?
Yeah, I felt as though it was the biggest story going, and it was the least explored by science and universities. However, I knew that there was a massive cover-up, and it reached to the highest levels of government. And I also knew that there was a overwhelming influence of the military-industrial complex that had usurped a very large part of our government, and that somebody needs to do something about it, or at least try. And that's what I've been focusing on, is removing the blocks of truth, because...
Aha! Rob Simone's on a mission from God.
Well, I think that was the Blues Brothers. It's really true. If this reality is able to be told and released, people are going to have to reevaluate their whole belief system. So for people who have chosen Christianity or Islam or Judaism, if this information comes to light, everyone's going to have to reevaluate how they think about the Bible, how they think about the belief system in God, and it's going to change everything. So our spiritual evolution on a planetary scale hangs in the balance of this ET reality becoming known.
I want to ask you a question. Why do you think there is a cover-up? I mean, what precipitates that?
There's an easy answer to that. 1947, the crash at Roswell, it happened to have happened in the middle of the Cold War. So the need for secrecy and suspicion was rife. So they took this thing and they did whatever they usually do in the middle of a Cold War. They bottle it up and they try and find out how it can be turned into an advantage against their adversary. In that case, at that moment, we had the Soviet Union, a formidable adversary, spies everywhere, communism everywhere. It was the climate in which the whole UFO field got created that was the cause for its secrecy. No, but that's not the case in other countries, though. Other countries, they're very open with it. Russia has been very forthcoming about it. Chile and Argentina and Peru and France, they don't have the sensibilities that we have in the United States. So their position and their openness to the UFO issue is remarkably more candid.
We've been covering the disclosure issues, you have too, for some time. And the recent Canadian conference seems to be making a little progress there. Paul Hellyer comes out and talks fairly open about it. And I'm advised that sometime later this month we'll have another announcement from up there.
Yep. Yeah, it could be. We're seeing a lot of things happen on the UFO front.
Basically, I just can't get a handle, and I don't think our listeners can either. I think that's one of the difficulties of the whole thing, is who's covering it up? Is it, what is the agenda here? Is it like Philip Corso said, it's a corporate thing, or is it a super secret Cold War thing? I mean, all that's progressed past that at this point.
Yeah, it is a little confusing because... people think that it's part of this MJ-12 group that's covering it up, or some cabal that's tied into secret societies that's covering it up, or maybe they think it's the military-industrial complex that's covering up for their own purpose of weaponization, or maybe they don't want to upset the energy concerns the oil families or the global bankers. I mean, there's been so many theories put forward. It is hard to go through them and get a clear answer.
In fact, I was talking to a fellow ufologist and a well-known person, and in my email I said, Rob Simone's a member of MJ-12 and or works for MJ-12. Uh-huh. And I got a long, serious answer back. I mean, this is a subject that people don't even like to joke about.
Well, what was the serious answer that you got back? You got to share that part of it, too. if you're going to bring up the first part.
The serious answer is that you are a great guy, and you're into this, and you're now doing research and making speeches, and you're still active in the media. And they've never known any. There's no way you could be an undercover agent.
I see. Well, that's refreshing to know.
Yeah. So I figure you got a good cover.
I've been in this field. You're right. I've been in this field for a long time, and I know a lot of the people that are involved, and I've been fortunate enough to work with a lot of these people, doing research, doing field work. It's exciting that now these things are being shown in the media a bit more. It's exciting that there's more opportunities to do television shows about them. So we're...
Oh, yeah. Well, let's get into this television thing, because on the networks, there's all kinds of fiction stories that are pretty true. In fact, there's a new series on CBS last night, was the first episode, in which it's laying out a lot of things that we hear about all the time in ufology. Now, somebody's talking to the screenwriters. Then you have, of course, War of the Worlds and the new version, They Need the Blood, and that goes back to cattle mutilations and things like that. And you're involved now out in Los Angeles in the world of television, and all the cable channels are doing lots of shows. Tell us about some of the things you're working on.
Yeah, well, the History Channel is going to put out a two-hour special about the Bermuda Triangle. That's going to be on December 8th, I believe. And I took part in that along with other researchers, and that's always been a mystery that people, you know, have been aware of.
What do you think's going on there in the Bermuda Triangle?
Well, there's about seven different possibilities that people have put forward. I'll just give you some of the highlights. They talk about rogue waves. They talk about giant squids. They talk about gas bubbling up from underneath the ocean. They've talked about this mysterious electromagnetic fog. But all of these sort of scientific possibilities, or unscientific, don't account for the strange things that have been going on there since the 1600s, which is some of the first history.
Right, sailing ships missed there.
This will be found with the crew not on board and the coffee still warm, no signs of struggle, just really unexplained, bizarre phenomenon. So that's the History Channel, and also we're working on a special about Islam, my research into the extraterrestrial components of Islam and the Holy Quran. That'll be coming out next year. That's a very interesting television product. And
I'm interested in that subject. We kind of glossed over it the first, but what do you think's going on there? I mean, with Islam, is it more attuned to what really happened than Christianity, or do you know?
Well, that's why I took a very long look at this. I've read the Quran back and forth, and I spent about 6 months in the Middle East talking with people, and I was amazed to find out how much material relates to the metaphysics, relates to paranormal activity. They have as much richness and complexity as, say, the Catholic Church does. You know, the Catholic Church does exorcisms. The Catholic Church has been involved in all these different ceremonies, and they're looking for wormwood. They're always interested in astrology. Same thing can be said about Islam. They too have brought in all of these different aspects, all of these different disciplines, in some way, shape, or form. But we never hear about it. Only time we hear about Muslims, Middle East, or Islam when it's associated with what's going on as it relates to terrorism or the West Bank. That's the other reason why I'm so interested in it, because there's so much there that people don't understand and haven't got a chance to hear about, that once they do, it's really going to open up people's perspective on this particular culture and religion.
So when you went on this world of tour, for yes. lack of a better term,
yes.
how much about Islam did you know?
I had a pretty good understanding of it, because before I left, I was very much involved in researching comparative religion and comparative mythology. To understand the UFO issue, it takes you into all different types of civilizations, past and present. So to understand ufology just from an American or Western perspective is simply not enough, or it simply wasn't enough for me. I wanted to find out how this is looked at, how this is dealt with, and how this is represented in the Aboriginal culture of Australia that goes back thousands of years. I wanted to find out about the Hindus, what their take is, what their mythology is. I wanted to find out about Asia, about Japan and the Shinto religion. I wanted to find out about Islam and the Aztecs, and that's what led me into this whole international ufology lecture.
In a nutshell, have you, are they all similarities, or are there basic differences? Is there something that's just totally different, or is it?
I would say there's more similar than different.
Okay.
Even, you know, the shocking thing is, you know, I've collected these photographs and images of paintings on rocks that date back 20,000 years, paintings from the 12th century and 13th century. And these images, separated by thousands of years and thousands of miles, are amazingly similar. There's a bowl that was discovered in Nepal that's about 12,000 years old. About 12,000 years old, and it's got an exact image of what we now call is the gray. These beings with large eyes and elongated faces can be seen on every single continent, except maybe Antarctica.
Tell me, what do you think, have we had previous, I guess maybe I better ask it this way. There's a big move now to think 2012 is going to be it, you know. The world's going to shift, we're going to go a different reality or whatever. What do you think about all of that?
Well, the reason why people say that 2012 is going to be a significant event is because it is specifically notated in the Mayan calendar. And the Mayan calendar has proven to be incredibly accurate, and people take heed to something that's so accurate when they put so much emphasis on 2012. And we also know that we're moving into a denser part of the universe. So there are different things converging on that particular date.
And we do seem to have more natural catastrophes than we've had in a long time.
It would seem that there's an increase in seismic activity. There's increased volcanism that is happening around the world. Some people are trying to take credit for it, and these people will make predictions. But it's actually not too hard to do so, because, as I say, we're moving into a denser part of the universe, and things are speeding up with all the pollution that we're creating too. So we're actually exacerbating changes that are happening, because we're doing incredible damage to the planet, and this is speeding up these reactions. Some people say it's almost a natural reaction by the Earth. It's responding. If you take the smallest animal, the smallest flea, or the smallest bird out of the system, the ecosystem, it would create havoc. The whole thing would shut down almost. But the only animal, if you completely remove from the earth, that would not affect the natural ecosystem is man. Every flea has got a place. It eats something, and something eats it, and it creates something that something else requires. But man does not harmoniously interact with nature. So if man disappeared, the earth probably would be better off.
And there seems to be a lot of spiritualism, for lack of a better term, saying basically that may be what's next in store. Maybe 90% of the population will be gone.
We are doing such devastating things to our atmosphere. There are bombs that have been exploded during the First and Second Gulf War that have just removed massive chunks of the ozone layer. There are about 20 different HAARP-type installations around the Earth that are used for over-the-horizon radar, which have devastating effects to the upper atmosphere. The nuclear explosions that we have done, both above the ground and below the ocean, do untold damage to the Earth. We have really done a number, and it's actually surprising that things aren't worse than they are. In fact, they very well might be. Some people say that these chemtrails, these planes that are spraying these chemicals in the upper atmosphere, are trying to repair a damaged ozone layer that it's so bad, if we knew the truth about it, there would be panic.
Well, that seems to be one of the major theses on why disclosure hasn't been made, is a man can't handle it. I'm not so sure that's true, but I think it would have something. I'm gonna let you go here in a minute, but you know, let's plug your speaking engagement next week in New Jersey again.
Yeah, I'm speaking at the Earth Mysteries Conference in Trenton, New Jersey, November 12th. I'll be speaking Saturday night about my international ufology lecture.
And you have a PowerPoint?
Absolutely. Got incredible pictures and videos of things in the air and things from around the world. It should be a real good presentation.
Okay, and on our website we have information there in case somebody wants to go see Rob Simone in person.
Yep, there's a lot of appearances that are coming up. Just go to www.robsimone.com.
By the way, Rob, we're in Nevada, and we've met here before in Nevada. Have you ever been up to Area 51?
I've been up there once, just to have a look around.
And what'd you think?
Well, there's really not much there, except the little alien. But it was fun to have this infamous place and take some pictures. And we actually almost got run over by this massive semi that came out of nowhere. And I was driving this little compact. And I tell you, we were lucky to get out of there alive. And I've never seen a semi-tractor trailer of this type. It was all white, and it had black windows, and we didn't see this thing coming. So, yeah, we had a bit of a close call there.
Well, we hear scary stories about that with people going up there. Anything you're working on right now?
Yes, right now I am in the middle of working with the Discovery Channel. We're putting together a series about some of the things that I like to do, some of the people that I talk to, and some of the places that I go as it relates to extraterrestrial research, metaphysical research. And that should be coming out next year. There's some exciting television things happening, too, that, you know, it'll be on the website as it updates.
It's always a pleasure to talk to a fellow talk show host.
It's my pleasure, Jerry.
What about this ET situation? Evil? Bad? Good? Wonderful? What's happening here?
I think the best answer is all of the above.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Thanks very much, Rod Simone. Okay, I've enjoyed it.